So although I reversed the terms in the title, as you can see, I said, because ignition to me is the beginning of flames, but I will tell you, explain you the terms later. So first I need to thanks, big thanks to Lars for inviting me here. Thanks to Steve, who encouraged me to come here despite I should be working for him on MHD in accretion disks. And thanks to my four daughters, who actually let me come here. So this is the list of my collaborators. And you'll see their names come in the next. So I want you to stare at this galaxy, which is M81, and this type 1A, just to, this is the purpose of my talk, is to try and link the properties of galaxies to the properties of type 1As. So I don't have to motivate you very much, because you know all what is at stake. But I want to spend some time detailing this. The links, how to link theoretically the properties of host galaxies to type 1As and their light curves and spectra, it's a very long path. It's a chain of different links. First, from the host galaxy, you produce by population thin series of progenitors. Then, if you can involve them until the very beginning of the flame, you can compute the ignition conditions. Then, you need to explode the star and then to compute the light curve and spectra with sophisticated radiative transfer code. Okay, so the path is long, but we have at least one simple model, at least one first hint for each of these links right now. So we are now in a position to try and play the game of linking these properties. And I will today speak mostly about this link, from progenitors to ignition conditions. And my talk is divided in two parts, first without ERCA process and then with ERCA process. So how do you make a type 1A? First, you take a white dwarf. So you take the warm heart of an AGB star, basically. So that's my first parameter, the mass of this white dwarf. Then you look at its chemical composition, that is simplified as one parameter, Z, its metallicity. Companion has the same metallicity, I'm going to assume. And the secondary evolved on a longer time scale than the birth of the first, of the white dwarf. And after a time that corresponds roughly to the main sequence lifetime of the secondary Rochlub overflows and accretion starts on the white dwarf. The white dwarf grows. And I'm going to skip all the problems of accretion on the white dwarf, because I already have enough problem at the center at the white dwarf. So I'm going to assume that the rate of growth of the CO core is given by, first, that the Hachizu wind gets rid of the extra matter by radiation, then that thermal pulses will get rid of the extra accretion rate in order to get some sort of accretion rate for the CO core, okay? And basically, the most important assumption of this is that the rate at which the CO core grows is simply a function of the mass of the white dwarf, okay? And therefore, the mass of the evolution of the white dwarf is determined by these three parameters. Okay, so the first part of my talk will be devoted to the effect of these two parameters, because without ERCA process, the metallicity has not much ERCA process, meaning electron captures, as you will see later. Metallicity has not much effect. So what's the path to explosion? The different phases of the way the carbon burns in the center of the core depends on the relative positions of three time scales: the neutrino cooling times, which is usually the slowest, the convective turnover time, which is usually the fastest, and the carbon fusion time, which starts to be the slowest. And in this first part, where the carbon just starts to burn, it's so slow that neutrino losses are able to get rid of the extra energy generated. Okay, so that's what some people call ignition, but I will reserve the word for the last stage. Okay, then the fusion time scale, which depends heavily on the temperature, becomes shorter than the neutrino time scale. So convection is now the way to get rid of the extra energy, and that's the convective core. That's when the convective core is built up, and the convective core grows very fast. That is too fast for thermal equilibrium to be to hold, because temperature sensitivity of fusion and electron degeneracy put the matter in an unstable configuration. That's why we call this phase a carbon flash. Okay. Then the fusion time scales become so short that the convection is not able to get rid of the energy. And at this stage, a flame front builds up, and the white dwarf will be gone in less than a few seconds. Okay. So what I will present you is the story until until a fraction of a second before a flame front builds up. Okay, so for this, I had to build a new stellar evolution code, which I called Flash the Tortoise, because Flash was already taken by the Chicago group. But my code is really designed to compute the flash of carbon in a carbon star. Started with the Eagleton code with a different moving mesh algorithm, but that's the detail. I use a staggered mesh for small steps stability. I have a special treatment of chemical fluxes for extremely low gradients. This allows to treat physical mixing. And finally, I have a front tracking algorithm for the interfaces between radiative and convective versions. And this is critical to achieve the ultimate phases a fraction of a second before ignition sets in. Right, so with this code, I was able to, and with the assumptions on the accretion I told you before, I was able to compute for a range of initial white dwarf mass and ages the evolution of a white dwarf from its birth here, then it cools down, the start of the accretion, the heating, this is temperature, sorry, versus central density. So it's the central evolution of the core. Temperature heats up until when the small triangle is, that's the birth of the convective core, and then temperature rises until ignition starts and a flame explodes the star, at which point I'm not able to compute anymore. So this presents the variation of the ignition density with respect to my parameter, which I vary here, the initial mass of the white dwarf. And you can see that higher initial mass leads to higher ignition density. And that's simply because the density is initially higher. Okay. Small white dwarf mass end up all on the same density. And that's because the accretion timescale is slower than the thermal diffusion timescale for the white dwarf. So that means the mass of the white dwarf determines the central temperature, basically. So they all end up on the same track at the center. At high density, there is also the same kind of thing. And that's due to a completely different effect. That's because the triangles will give you a kind of ignition curve. And that's because of screening effects in the electron screening effects in the carbon burning rates, which bend the ignition curve like this. And so every curve here starts to ignite as it overtakes a given density. So you can deduct the same kind of properties by varying the age as well. So the age being the in other words, the cooling time of the white dwarf. So depending on how long you let the white dwarf cool, you will achieve a lower initial temperature, and so you get to higher densities for older systems, or younger systems ignite at smaller densities. Okay. So that's a summary of the two effects I just told you about. And you can see that white dwarf initial mass, ignition density, and the, each one of these curves give you different ages. Okay, and you can see that you have a minimum density where many systems end up, and a maximum density, which is also a point of concentration of the curves. So one of the main points of this study is that the fact that there is a range of ignition densities. It goes from 2 10 to the 9 to nearly 5 10 to the 9. Although at high densities like this, electron captures should be taken into account. And in this study, I've only put carbon burning. It's very simple. I just wanted to get the burning rate. I talk about electron captures in the next part. So now that I have this model, I can build from I can get an idea of the distribution of the initial parameter with population synthesis that has been done by Sunwen Han, and compute the distribution of the final ignition parameters. And here is what I get. So that's for different range of ages. But the main point is that due to the concentration of densities that I told you about, you've got a concentration of, you've got a bimodal distribution with more systems at high densities and more systems at low densities. And from these three different histograms, you can see that young systems ignite at higher densities. So that hints towards density being maybe, if you trust these models, of course, and if you trust these observations, that density goes with along with density with luminosity, but this is only qualitative. Okay. So a summary for this first part: basically, age and white dwarf mass determine the initial density. All the rest of the parameters, I didn't show you that, but you will trust me, are correlated to this ignition density. But for the chemical parameters, which I'm going to talk in the next part, talk about in the next part. So basically, we have two independent parameters for the ignition density, the ignition for the ignition, central density at ignition, and maybe it's the first parameter related to luminosity of type 1As, and metallicity of the progenitor stars. And this paper strongly suggests that it could be the second one. Okay, now to the ARCA process. So, when the convective core builds up here in green, in the white dwarf, carbon burns at the bottom, and it produces some pairs of nuclei which have the same atomic number, but which differ by one in the proton number. For example, sodium 23 and neon 23. And ARCA, so that's an ARCA pair, and ARCA reactions allow to, by emission of electrons or capture of electrons, allow to come to switch from one to the other. And you've got emission above a certain density threshold and capture below, sorry, it's the contrary, but it's above in the in the altitude of the star. Okay? And as the literature shows, you can see that this process is quite complex. This is the net heating effect of the ARCA process through the literature. And it starts by the discovery by Paczynski of the convective ARCA effect, which shows that it should be a cooling effect. Then Udian heating term, etc. Well, the ARCA process has a long history, and it's not finished. So to try and build a consistent model of this, I built a two-streams model where I compute spherical radiation hydrodynamics equations in two streams. and I deal with all the, then I'm sure I'm conserving energy and chemistry, and I get a very complicated model at the end, but which has the properties I want. And I can then take back the limit to one stream, and I will get a self-consistent MLT theory, which three additional terms. One is a convective work in the energy equation. One is a contribution to chemical gradients in the luminosity. And the last one, which I'm going to talk about in more detail, is the sensitivity of the buoyancy forces to chemistry. So to illustrate that, here are ice cubes floating on umeshu. So if you want to know how umeshu tastes, you need to ask Ken Nomoto, because I don't know. But the point is that ice cubes float on umeshu. Why is that? Is it because they are colder? Is it because of the temperature? Certainly not. Okay, it's just because they are lighter. And any stupid classical stellar evolution code will tell you that a colder bubble sinks. Okay, so we'd be wrong for this kind of thing. The point is that in degenerate matter, density, so it's the density that matters for buoyancy forces. And in degenerate matter, density depends little on temperature, but much more on electron fraction. Okay? So the basic conclusion of that is that Urquhart reactions slow down the convective motions. Okay? However, a rough estimate of this effect shows that because of the high sensitivity of carbon burning temperature, eventually, when the temperature reaches nearly 10 to the 9 K, the heat generated by carbon burning will be so high that the Urquhart process will not be able to slow down convection. Okay? But still, we would like to know the history of the convective profile. So I tried with flash, and I failed because of numerical problems. But what we can see is that the code tries to build up a region where the velocity, convective velocities are nearly zero. Craig Wheeler and Yossi Stein had a 2D, very sophisticated code with very nice simulations, and they showed that indeed the convection is shut down by Urquhart process above the Urquhart shell. And finally, I want to tell, I want just to present you why the Urquhart process is so important to compute, because, so this is an introduction actually to Ed Brown's talk as well. So this is a simple model I've designed to take into account what is the budget of electron captures through the history that leads to a type 1A. And I'm counting the electron captures due only to the initial metallicity. So what happens to the CNO that is initially in the star? First gets converted to a nitrogen 14 with one electron capture. Then helium burning converts it to neon 22 with another electron capture. And during the carbon burning phase, as I showed you, because the density is so high, there is a lot of room for electron captures to occur. So you get an additional two electron captures, and it's between zero and two actually, because depending on the completeness of the burning of this neon 22, and depending on the efficiency of the Urquhart process. And Francisco Förster is in the process of confirming this, and actually it should be between three and four there. Then I can deduce the neutron excess at ignition, and thanks to a reasoning first made by Tins, Brown, and Turan in 2003, I can deduce the explosive nucleosynthesis, and finally, using the models of light curve from Mazzali and Pociadowski, we try and infer the drift of the luminosity with relation with respect to the metallicity. And that's the end of my talk. So I just want to conclude that the Urquhart process is a hard process. A simple model shows that it's important. And we have still lots of work to do before we can conclude.
Thank you very much. So, questions? Do I have a microphone assistant?
Yeah, but if you can't shout enough that it'll go on the web, I don't think. Wait.
Well, if you put so many type 1As to very high ignition density, these would look pretty weird when they explode, because at those high densities, electron captures would completely destroy all the nickel 56, so there would be no nickel 56. There would be faint. Nevertheless, you would make lots of heavy elements, so the opacities would be such that the light curve would decay pretty slowly. So you would make faint type 1As with slowly decaying light curves, and though we don't see them. So what's wrong with that argument?
I agree with this argument, but you don't know what the electron capture history has done on the...
Oh, but if you go to such high densities, then it's quite clear the YSAP-E goes so low that nickel 56 is no longer the nucleus you produce. Well, if you go to three, four times 10 to the 9, it's still all right. But putting so many into the 5 times 10 to the 9 bin is extremely dangerous.
Well, I don't know how they look like. We need to... And these models at high density are not yet self-consistent, because they need to include electron captures precisely in the carbon flash phase. And you need to include the electron captures along with the convective Hercap process, because then the convective history will be very different.
I'd like to be contrary on the other extreme. You need to have a few, not many, but a few ignite at more than 5 times 10 to the 9, because there's calcium 48 in our bones, and that's the only place in the world to make it.
Let me say, just in what your time-dependent history here, I did write one paper that was wrong. I think we now have it right, and I think you've got it right, that the convective ERCA does affect the convection. So I think you're on the right track there. My answer to Wolfgang, never mind Stan, would be that many of them are around the boundary where the convective ERCA comes in at sort of modest densities. It may not be that all of them go up to 5 or 6 or 7 times 10 to the 9. And there is evidence that you do have some stable nickel in the middle of some of them. And whether the convective ERCA plays a role in that, I don't know. But there's things that point in that direction. In any case, if you get up above that ERCA threshold, I think we have to take that limit of the convection into account. I think you're exactly right about that.
Oh, another point maybe to answer that question is that, oh, I'm going in the wrong direction, is that I think the fact that there is a bimodal distribution is robust. I don't think that the actual values here are robust. These depend on what you assume for the accretion rate. This depends on the Hachizu model I use. Okay. Sorry, what did you say? Or 3. I don't know. No, I meant that you will have these, basically, this peak is due to electron screening effects in the ignition process, and this peak is due to the fact that you have thermal equilibrium across the star for low mass star. Then the precise value of these depend on the physics in your model. And the electron screening effects are also work in progress.
I was wondering why you require there to be a proton capture on neon 22 to create sodium 23 when carbon burning itself produces sodium 23.
Okay, so I didn't have time to be precise enough. I'm just... carbon will of course produce neon 22 neon 20, whatever. Neon 22, yes. But
sodium
we are
23. Sodium 23.
Neon 20, and then by proton.
No, it produces neon 20 and sodium 23, both. It produces both in two separate branches.
Whatever. But what we are looking for is is only the metallicity effect. Okay. So we are comparing a network where the initial value of neon 22 is some value due to the initial metallicity, to a model where initially you don't have any neon 22. So we are not looking at the neon 22 or the sodium 23 that has been produced by the carbon burning. We are looking at the fate of these neon 22 that came from the initial metallicity in the process of carbon burning, and that's different. And just looking at the additional electron captures that are due to this seed of neon 22.
One more question, that we have time for one more if there are any. Okay, let's thank our speaker again.